How's it going, everybody? Kyle Brotherson here. This is Dirt Bike Channel Podcast. Wanted to tell you guys a little story. I listen to a lot of podcasts about a lot of different things. And one thing that's a lot of fun sometimes is if they just tell you a story. So here in this podcast, you're not really going to learn how to be a better rider. You're just going to have a story. We're going to do story time now. We're going to do story time about a documentary that we recently just did and we have released. I haven't been pushing it too much, but we recently did a documentary here with Dirt Bike Channel. It's something that I wanted to do for a long time, and finally we kind of just made it happen. I didn't get any sponsors for it. Kind of in keeping with how I do things right now, I don't really have any sponsors for Dirt Bike Channel. There are some people that donate money, you know, every month or something on Patreon or PayPal, but I don't have, like, you know, company sponsors that that support Dirt Bike Channel. And I really kind of like it that way, because then I don't have to, I'm not owned by anybody. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you have sponsors, that means you're owned by them or whatever. I'm just saying that I really like to be independent and I don't have to, you know, kowtow to any one company or any one group. And I really like that. But if for those of you that haven't seen it, which almost none of you have seen it, we did a mini documentary. We named it Leave a Single Track Volume 1. I don't even say the words Leave a Single Track in the documentary, but it just seemed like the right thing to do. Because if we do this in the future, maybe we'll do Leave a Single Track Volume 2. And then people will be like, hey, I liked Volume, you know, did you see Volume 2? You know, that was cool. I don't know. The point is, we're just free balling here. We're just kind of going free flowing here and making this stuff up as we go. But yeah, so we've got a 22-minute mini documentary about a 4-day riding trip that we went on earlier this year, just in September. I know it's only, you know, October as I'm releasing this podcast, but this trip happened early September of 2020 here. Up near Stanley, Idaho. There's so many places to ride in Idaho. It's amazing, in the summer at least. And this is my third time up to that area. We ride all over. We kind of like stay in Stanley, and then we'll stage, you know, various places. You might drive 25 minutes. You might drive an hour, you know, this direction, that direction. But we're, you know, centrally there, kind of in the Sawtooth Mountains, that area. It's just absolutely amazing up in there. And I've now been there for 12 different riding days. And we're just kind of scratching the surface of what there is in that area. It's pretty amazing. But the story about how this this whole idea came about, where I was like, you know what? I want to pay someone to do this filming for me. The way that it kind of started was the first time that I went to Stanley, Idaho, that area, it was in 2017. And I worked the entire time. I'm taking GoPro footage. I mean, point of view footage. I don't use a GoPro anymore, but actually, I can't remember if I was using my Sony camera back then in 2017. But the point is, I took all this point of view footage, and I had I had drones with me, or a drone with me on that trip. I had other cameras with me, and I was just constantly working the entire time, because that's the gig that I have, you know, created for myself. I'm going to make these videos, and I'm going to be you know, the main camera guy. And that's because I can't afford to pay anybody else. Well, as things have kind of progressed and everything, I thought, you know what? Maybe I would want to do a project where I wasn't the guy holding the camera the entire time. Fast forward into 2019. I'm sitting there in my office in September and October of 2019, so about a year ago, and I'm starting to make some of the first videos of the trip that we took up there. And I've got a bunch of drone footage. I've got a bunch of stuff. And I remember thinking, you know, we went to these amazing places, and I'm trying to put this footage down into a timeline of this video, that video. And I specifically remember sitting right here in this exact spot here in my basement office in my house and looking at some stuff. And I was watching this drone footage back of us up at this. It was actually the Custer Lookout. For those of you that know where that is, an amazing, just beautiful, beautiful, awe-inspiring place. And I was looking at the body language of the people that I knew. Sam was there, Tyler was there, and I'm watching just them in the footage. And I'm seeing they have a totally different posture, and they're having a completely different experience than I'm having in that moment. Because in that moment, I am working. I'm working and I'm scrambling. Yes, you have to work and ride it. You know, you work and you ride up to the area or whatever. But as soon as I get to the place, like to this place where I'm now filming, I am working. I'm scrambling. I'm trying to get the shots. I'm not enjoying it. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not enjoying it at all, but I'm not enjoying it nearly as much as what it appeared the guys on the screen were. You could see me. I could see my body language. I could see the energy in my shoulders, the energy. And I watched these other guys and they're like, you know, enjoying it. And I'm like, well, that's because I was working. What if I paid someone to do that job for me and see if that worked and see what that experience was like. And so that's kind of where the genesis of this kind of started. I'd thought about doing it for a while, but then I'm sitting here in this office at these computer screens last year, and I'm like, maybe I ought to just take a risk and do that. Like, figure out how to at least one time pay someone to film for me on one of these trips. I can't afford to do this all the time. And that has been proven out like really, really well, really like soundly right now as I look at the bills and the things that we racked up for this. But what I needed to do in order to make that dream come to fruition or dream come to life is I needed to find a person that first and foremost could ride really well. I needed to find a very skilled person. I needed to find someone that is really good on a dirt bike that can hold their own on some of these trails that we're going to go on. Somebody that we don't have to worry about. Someone that we don't have to babysit on the bike. They also needed to be very good with cameras. They needed to be able to fly a drone. They needed to be able to shoot a professional camera. And they needed to have an eye for, you know, film. Talk about looking for a needle in a haystack. And so that was kind of the thing that I thought, well, that's going to be the toughest part. You know, I can make some money. We can set some money aside and try this thing. But we got to find this person that can ride a dirt bike really well, who also has these other skills, these other, you know, video skills and riding skills. And those are hard things to find. You can find good riders. And you can find good, you know, cinematographers, video people, camera people, but to find those things that exist in the same person, I was like, wow, that's going to be tough. So I'm just kind of mulling that over for months. And I mention it here and there to a couple different buddies at various times. And then earlier this year in 2020, somewhere around, I don't know, June timeframe, I'm going on a dirt bike ride with my buddy Tyler. We're up American Fork Canyon here in Utah. And I just kind of bring this up to him in the middle of a ride. I'm like, hey, I'd love to do this. Like, what if I paid someone and they came and they filmed and we kind of made like a little mini documentary or a real documentary, a full documentary about this trip that we go on? You know, would you be okay with that? Would you be all right if we had a camera guy come along? Because he already knows that anytime you're shooting with me, if I'm going to do anything other than just point of, you know, view footage like off my helmet camera, it slows everything down. And this has been the theme that everyone who's ridden with me, whether it's Sam Oldham or Scott Seeley or, you know, anybody, you know, Tyler Thewison, if you're riding with Kyle, and there's been a lot of other people, but if you're riding with Kyle and if he gets out his drone, it's going to slow everything down. If he gets out his bigger camera, it's going to slow everything down, you know? And I hate doing that. I really hate doing that. And most of the guys that I've ridden with have been like, oh, no, no, it's all good. You know, Garrett Wasland, oh, it's all good. Like, get out the camera anytime. We don't mind. But I hate slowing things down. And so the guys that eventually were going to come on the trip, I reached out to them and I said, hey, are you okay with this happening? Because it's going to slow things down. I just want to make sure that you're okay with that. Well, to come back to that the story of me and Tyler sitting there on the ride, I'm like, look, I need to find this needle in a haystack. And how am I ever going to do that? And Tyler's like, hey, well, I know this guy. I know him from Instagram. You should check him out. It's Generical on Instagram. And he's like, you should reach out to him. And so I'm like, okay. So literally, we're right there on the ride. I pull up my phone and for some crazy reason, I had service right there in the middle of the ride. I pull it up on Instagram and I just like send them a direct message. I am notorious for not responding to direct messages on Instagram. I respond to all messages on email. It's just kind of the way that I was raised in the corporate world and stuff. But there's too many Facebook messages. There's too many, direct messages on Instagram. I'm just not good at doing that part of it, keeping up the communication of that side. But I sent him a direct message on Instagram because it was the only way I knew to get a hold of him. And when I get back that later that day, he's like, "Hey, yeah, I'd love to talk." And I'm just like, "Hey, I've got an idea, a project that I'm kind of kicking around. Can we have a phone call?" So we do. We have a phone call. It's Chris Bartkowski. He's with Generical Design. It's his own company. He's out of California. Super cool dude, professional snowboarder actually back in the day, and extreme sports, that type of stuff. Very athletic guy, super chill guy. And we start this relationship on the phone. I'm like, "Hey, this is the thing that I'm thinking about doing. Is this something you'd be interested to do? Send me your quote, send me some rates." And I knew he was asking all the right, I could tell he was asking all the right questions. And I'm like, that gave me confidence. The other thing that gave me confidence is he wasn't cheap. So, and I wasn't looking for cheap. I'm like, I want this to be cool. And I didn't even know what I wanted. I just knew I didn't want it to be cheap. I wanted it to be quality. I wanted to pay for someone's skills. And it just seemed like it was good. So we agree on a rate. And yes, it was expensive, but I was okay with that. I didn't nickel and dime him. I'm like, "Tell me what your rates are. Send me what your quote is." He sends it over. And the only thing that I did is I raised it. I said, "Hey, I don't think you baked in enough editing hours on this. So why don't we double the editing hours that you have? And then we'll kind of figure out from there." And he's like, "Okay, cool." And so this happened, a couple months in advance of the trip. It baked it in here that I wanted him to drive to Utah to my house. And then we would basically be able to load up, shoot a couple shots at my house and shoot a couple shots here and there, B-roll of going up to Idaho and all this stuff. And so, of course, that's time that he's time and money and all this stuff on his. So we baked that into the whole project where I was paying for him to come to Utah, all that stuff, time travel, blah, blah, blah. And when he gets here, we actually even break bread together. He was like, "Hey, I don't know if I want to leave my two bikes in the back of the truck." That was one of the reasons. That was one of the places that I knew that I knew this, that Chris was legit, because he asked a question. He's like, "Wait, so if we're riding for 4 days straight and we're in Idaho in the middle of nowhere and maybe 50 miles a day, do you have room so that I can bring two bikes?" And I'm like, this guy knows that he gets it, because crazy things happen. And I'm like, "Yeah, we're actually, yes, you can definitely bring two bikes, bring your main bike, bring your backup bike, because I'm bringing a backup bike. Tyler's bringing a backup bike. So we'll have four of us total, and we'll have seven bikes. So we will have three backup bikes." And so that was one of the reasons I knew that he was asking all the right questions. So once he gets here to my house, we load, instead of him leaving his bikes in a hotel, we load his bikes in my trailer to stay overnight here. And it's like, "Hey, we ought to have dinner. Do you want to stay for dinner?" So he stays for dinner. We cook up some steaks. And then the next morning, he goes to his hotel. The next morning, we load up. I guess it wasn't morning. It was around noon. We load up here at my house. Garrett drives up from St. George, and we load up and we head up to Tyler's house in Centerville and grab him. And then we head off and we drive up. And it's about 7 hours-ish up to the area that we were going to from my house. And so it's just, we just had a big, a travel day that day. Then basically, the way we do these things is we'll rent a cabin/house or something up there in the Sawtooth Mountains area, Stanley area, and that'll be kind of our, home base for riding up there. So, and I was, nervous about the project because I didn't really have a super big direction of how I wanted it to go. I wasn't giving Chris a lot of like, "Hey, here's what my vision is for the project," other than I want to just kind of document the entire thing and see what we can get. So, That's kind of how it all got started. Then day one, and by the way, you guys, you can grab this video. You can go to my website, dirtbikechannel.com, right now, and you can download your own copy of this thing, because it's done. It's in the can, at least the first version of it. If there may only ever be one version of it, but if you go to my website, In fact, this thing can get you entries to win the three dirt bikes that I'm giving away. If you were listening to this video before, you know, in between October 15th, this video, if you're listening to this podcast, you can tell I had to do a YouTube video this morning. Anyway, put that up in the can. If you are listening to this before December 15th of 2020, you can get entered to win one of the three dirt bikes that I'm giving away. You head over to dirtbikechannel.com. I got all the details over there. But you can find this video and download it from a video hosting service called Gumroad. If you go to my website, there's a menu up there that says shop. One of the options is videos. In fact, I'm just going to go to dirtbikechannel.com right now and just pull it up. Yeah, so you've got shop, and under that is videos. Then it brings up the top video here is Leave a Single Track Volume 1. So I put a fair price on there of $10. For the 23 minute video. But you can pay more if you want. This is just a real big test for me. I just want to see, and whether or not we ever break even on this remains to be seen. It's very slow in the beginning. But I haven't really pushed it a lot. I haven't pushed it on YouTube at all. I haven't pushed it on Facebook at all. Cause I'm still trying to get my freaking Facebook account back. That got hacked a week ago. Well, a little over a week ago, it got hacked, and I still haven't been able to get back into my, bloody Facebook account. But anyway, that's another story. So this video is live, and you can go grab this. You know, day one, we were in the Casino Creek area. We went up to one of the lookouts up there. It's just absolutely amazing. Amazing views. But the kind of disappointing thing was, and this wasn't Chris's fault, but like, DJI, because a lot of the drones that get flown, I have a Phantom drone. I have, in fact, two DJI drones. I've bought, you know, multiple in the past. DJI is the maker of these drones, and they had issued this like no fly zone for all of Idaho, all of Idaho and half of Utah. And it's funny because this is the time when all these fires are going on in California. And so you can't fly a drone if there's like helicopters in the area or there's like forest fires and stuff. You can't fly a drone because if you do, then it basically grounds all the flight services. Like if you got firefighters fighting fires with airplanes or helicopters or whatever, drones are a bad, bad idea because, you know, you can have a drone strike and it could possibly take down an aircraft. And so it was crazy because they didn't issue a flight restriction for California where all the fires were. There were no fires around us in Idaho, but yet DJI, I think, had mistakenly placed a no-fly zone for the entire area. And so the drones that Chris brought would not fly. And I brought two backup drones, but I didn't even try them that day. And we're like, okay, whatever. I've got some drone footage from the other two times that I've been up here that we can throw this in and sprinkle this in. So we did that. Awesome first day up there. We did have one issue with Garrett's shifter. Garrett tipped his bike over into a rock and broke his shifter off. But because we're prepared, you know, we've got backup bikes. We've got tons of parts with us on our backs and in the trucks. And we were able to just, Tyler actually had a shifter right in his backpack. And we were able to throw that on Garrett's bike. And then we get back because we had multiple shifters back at the truck. At the time I wasn't carrying a shifter in my pack. I do have a shifter in my pack now, a backup shifter in my pack. But anyway, point is, really good day. We go up there, we have some fast stuff, we have some slow stuff, we have some technical stuff. It was awesome. I rode my KTM 250 XC, TPI that day. I freaking love that bike and it was just a great day. That was a day that it was stuff that I'd ridden before. When we go up into this area, up to Stanley, it's difficult for us to kind of plan where we want to ride because most of the stuff that we've ridden up there is super, super fun, super amazing. And so you want to go back and you want to do it again. But yeah, there's all this new stuff there that we want to kind of explore. And so what we've done kind of in the past is we do some of the stuff we know, and then we do some new stuff that we don't know as well or whatever. We're trying to just learn new trails all the time. The way we kind of had it planned originally was we were going to do one day that we knew what the trails were and then 3 days that we basically didn't know anything about the trails. In the end, we just did basically 50-50. We did day one was all stuff we knew. Day two was stuff that I didn't know. I mean, Tyler knew some of the stuff, but day two was all new to me. Day three was all new to me. And I think it was all pretty mostly, or if not all, new to Tyler as well. And then day four, we ended up doing some stuff that we knew. I'll get to that in a minute, but day one was awesome. I mean, we come back, no harm, no foul. We just had one problem with the shifter. It was a little cold that day for me because I wasn't quite prepared. We kind of left the truck a little bit rushed, and I didn't have the exact gear that I wanted on my torso, but I ended up, you know, it was fine. So then on day two, I was prepared more. You know, I actually brought like a jacket with me that was just around my waist and whatever. Day two, we did this Altiris Lake Loop, and it ended up being, you know, a long day, and we didn't know exactly how long it was. So we were carrying fuel with us on these bikes, and the TPI bikes, we were all on TPI bikes. Excuse me, all the bikes there that were ridden were actually 2020 bikes, 250 XCs, 300 XCs, 300 XCWs. And those bikes can go a really, really long way. You can go anywhere between 55 miles and 85 miles, just kind of depending on the terrain. I've never run out of gas at 55 miles. In fact, technically, I've never run one of them out of gas because I've done some rides where we did 65 miles and I could tell there was at least 15 miles left of gas in the tank. And then it just really depends. But Altiris Lake day two was, you know, a longer day. And it was probably my favorite day of the trip. We ended up seeing a really, really cool lake. There's lakes all over. That's one of the great things about Idaho. There's so many of these like natural forest lakes, and there's so much water because the mountains are so deep and just there's so many of them. Here in Utah, we're never that far away from civilization usually, and we don't have a ton of water crossings. There's not a ton of water. In Idaho, up in that area, you're routinely a million miles from nowhere, where it's just mountain range after mountain range after mountain range, and you've got a ton of water, you know, that's super fun to cross through and whatever, and you see all these awesome mountain lakes, things that you don't get to see as much here in Utah. So it's super amazing. And then the thing that was interesting about day two was, you know, I decided to ride my other bike. I was going to ride my KTM 300 XCW for that day. Tyler did the same thing. So on day one, both Tyler and I were riding 250 XCs. Day two, both of us were riding 300 XCWs because we knew we were kind of tailoring it to these rides. One of the ways that we kind of plan the routes out is there's a guy named Bill Dart. He's a local guy from up in that area, and he's ridden all of these trails and documented them, and he has these color-coded maps that he sells. If you can find them on Bill Dart Maps. If you just Google or search Bill Dart Maps, he's got these maps. You buy them for $10 a pop. They're dual-sided. Once I saw how amazing they were and just how fun it is to kind of like plan out a route this way on a map and then have them as kind of like a reminder and a keepsake, I bought them all. $50 for all of the maps that he has. I don't get a single dime, anything. I talked to Bill. I told him, hey, I'm going to start referring people to you, but I didn't even ask like, hey, can I get a cut of this? Because I'm like, dude, he put in so much work on this. Like, he just deserves to make a little bit of this back. And it's super good for route planning. Well, and he's a legit rider, and he had one of the little things that we were going to do on that was like listed as a double black diamond. He goes like green trail, easy, blue trail, intermediate, black trail is like hard, black diamond trail is hard, and then double black diamond is like put your big boy pants on. And it depends on which direction you're going. Like sometimes if you were just coming down that little black diamond we did, it wouldn't have been a big deal at all. But going up it, man, it's legit. You know, and then same thing, like, you know, it just depends. And there, it's interesting too, because some of the trails that he listed as blues, like it's a two out of a four. There are some sections on there that I know there are people that would never do that. It's like, no, that feature, I'm not going to do that feature. And this is listed as a blue. So he's kind of got to like average the entire trail out. And so you have to take it with some grain of salt. But the point is, if you just like the fast and the flowing, you stay on the green stuff. If you're not that adventurous, you better not do anything more than the blue. If you want like legit riding, do some of the blacks and do some of the double blacks. And that's what we do. We try to plan it out. So we've got a mix of everything. Sorry, we got a camera in my hand and I somehow turned the thing on. But we do a mix of everything. And so this day was a mix of that, where we knew there was going to be some more challenging stuff. And so we had, you know, we planned that in. We had one second, we were doing this switchback, and we tried it a couple times to try to get a couple cool shots. Actually, we were just trying to do it clean. So what would happen a lot of times is we'd send Chris in front of us. Either I was in front and I would like say, hey, here's an area that I think is cool that I would like to get a shot with. And then, you know, Chris would find a position and he would shoot us going through that thing. Or if we knew there were going to be some cool stuff within the next little bit, we would just send Chris up. We'd be in connection on a radio, like a two-way radio. And I'd be like, hey, Chris, sometimes what I would do is I would just say, okay, we're just going to let you go. We're going to give you 4 minutes. We're going to sit here for 4 minutes, which means you can ride and try to find something. And basically, when you stop riding, you will know that we'll be coming in 3 or 4 minutes. And it gives him time to kind of set things up and everything. And that worked out pretty well. Really slows down the riding and everything, but it made the days longer. So our mileages ended up being shorter than what we've done in the past. But our days were even longer than what they were in the past because of this stop, start. And Chris was such a trooper, man. He did every single thing that we did, but he was carrying these big packs because he brought like a Sony FS5, I think that's what it is, camera, big camera. A couple days he had, you know, extra lenses. The one day he drew, well, two of the 4 days he carried a drone with me or a drone with him. One of the days it didn't get used at all, which totally sucked. It sucks so bad to drag camera gear with you that you don't use. Don't ask me how I know because I've done it a million times. But if you're carrying a drone with you and you don't actually fly that drone or you fly it very little, let's say you carry a drone with you, you bring 3 batteries and you only use half of one battery, it really just it just like eats at you. Anyway, so Chris was awesome, but we were doing this, you know, we did the switchback where we were like, hey, I went up at first and I did the switchback, but the camera wasn't rolling because everyone was behind me. And or is that how it worked? I can't remember. Maybe, no. I guess I did that switchback 3 times because I did it first and then said, hey, Chris, let's get a shot of this. So Chris comes up, he sets up his camera, he shoots Tyler doing it, he shoots Garrett doing it. Garrett ended up busting his oil cap on the bike by tipping it down into the rock. At that point, I go down and I try to do it again. I screw it up. I'm like, let me do it a third time. I do it a third time and I make it through. But it wasn't pretty. What ended up happening the entire time is I could go through something and do it clean. And a lot of times I would be in the lead and it would just be, oh, here it is on the trail. And boom, I do it clean. I'd stop. I'd tell Chris, hey, let's set up a shot right here and do this. So then I'd turn around, go back, and then come through the obstacle. And then I would like hose it. That happened over and over and over again. But anyway, so Garrett's got this broken. He actually smashed the oil cap on his bike and it bent. It put a little bit of a bend in the, you know, the clutch cover as well. So even if we would have had a backup cap, which I think maybe now one of us is going to put a backup cap in our packs, but it wouldn't have threaded in. So we're like, okay, we've got JB Weld steel stick. What can we do? Tyler brings several hose clamps with him. And so he had a pretty good idea of like, hey, we could just basically cut some plastic and make our own cap with some plastic or whatever, or a pouch from like his lunch, from like a fruit pouch or whatever. And you could just basically make a cap out of that plastic material and a hose clamp and keep the oil in that way. So we're like, okay, that'll probably work pretty good. And so we did that. And then we start going again and we get to that double black diamond, you know, and we're like, oh crap, we've been out for, you know, 4 hours. Or 5 hours or 6 hours, and we're basically now just halfway there. We've got to go up this nasty climb. So we went up this nasty climb, double black diamond thing. I ended up just being in the front at that time, and so we have basically no footage of me going up it because I was the first one up. I was the first one up, and then you had Chris behind me, and then Tyler behind him, and then Garrett bringing up the rear. Well, so I'm working my guts out. I push the bike up the hill, just multiple places where you're just off the bike huffing and puffing, steep, you know, loose rocks, tons of roots and everything. Just it's just a chore to get up this one thing. I'll do it again, but it wasn't my favorite part of the day. But like when you have sections like that, it really helps you to appreciate the faster flowing stuff. So I get up, then Chris comes up, and then he shoots with his camera, and I got some footage, some, you know, iPhone footage of the guys doing this. But it's so funny because you look back and you see the footage that you took, and it's like, why does it look like I'm struggling so much? Why don't I just like jump on the pegs and go flying up that thing? But hey, when you've seen what gnarly stuff looks like when you've ridden it, and then you see like even professional film guys of shooting you coming up that, and you're like, that looks like nothing. you start to just realize, you start to be able to kind of pick it out and be like, that's nasty. I can tell that's nasty even on a YouTube video because of the way that it looks. And but then you got the people out there, they're like, oh my gosh, just click up into fourth gear and pin it, whatever. You know, you got the people telling you just like, oh, just you need to shift up two gears. You're in first gear, you should be in third. Or you are in second gear and you should be in fourth gear. Like, I could tell you billions of times, millions of times when I've had these, you know, comments that come to me. Anyway, long day. What happens is in the middle of that, Garrett ends up blowing the top of his that trail hack off the bike because he's doing these static zaps. Some people call them Jap zaps. I don't know if that's the term. I don't want to be like politically insensitive or anything, but I'm going to call it a static zap or whatever, or it's a trials technique. And he goes and he blows the trail hack off the bike. So then we are like, okay, let's steel stick this thing. You know, we could have found like a stick or something and carved it and jammed it down in there, but then you could possibly knock that out. So we're like, hey, let's just do steel stick because we've got a replacement clutch cover back at the truck. We had multiple of them. Garrett had one. I had one. I think Tyler had one back at the truck. So we're like, we'll just steel stick this sucker because the thing is ruined anyway. Your cap is, your clutch cover is ruined anyway. And so we'll just steel stick the top of it. So we did that, steel stick it, wait there, and then we drag him up the hill. And then, you know, we've got this black diamond to go down, and it was super cool to go down that. It was a long enough trail. I wouldn't have wanted to go the other way. Going the other way up this black one would have been a chore. Eventually we'll do it someday. But super fun. And we get back to the truck. That night we replace. We wash Garrett's bike off. We do a full oil or a gear oil change on his bike, and we put the backup clutch cover that he brought. More on that later. So we're sitting there and we're washing the bike until 10 o'clock at night, and then boom, let's go to sleep and get up for day three. Day three, we're going to do this Germania Creek. For you guys that know this area, we had never done Germania Creek before, but we start, you know, we plan out a big loop. We get there to the trailhead, and it starts off bad because Garrett's bike, it won't even start. It started last night, but we technically never started the bike after his clutch cover was on. So, one second. Sorry, I had to get a little little bit of water there, wet whistle. So, yeah, we started his bike, but we never started it at the very end. What happened was, I don't want to spoil it for you. So we get there, bike won't start. We're all geared up to go. We've checked everything, checked tire pressure, all this stuff. We're thinking everything's good to go. I'm going to take my 250 XC on this day because I knew we were going to have some faster, more flowing stuff. And then Garrett's bike won't start. It just clicks. Crazy. It's a brand new bike, you know, 2020 bike. He's only got like 35 hours on it and something. Like, what is going on? So we start swapping relays. We start swapping all the fuses. We might have even swapped ECUs. We swap batteries because the bike will actually start. We pole started it. We pole started it and it would start and it would run, but it wouldn't start on its own. It's just click, click, click. You know, we're like, that is crazy. And so we've spent like an hour and a half kind of messing with the bike and can't get it to run, and we don't even know why. We think, well, maybe it's some starter relay that's down, buried down below, and we're like, but look, we've got three backup bikes here. Maybe let's just use one of the backup bikes. So I'm like, hey, Garrett, just ride my 2020 300 XCW, the bike I rode yesterday, and I'll pull up, because I was going to ride my 250 XC anyway. I'm like, just ride my backup bike. So after we decide to do that, we are like, okay, let's go. So we go and we get about an hour away from the truck, maybe an hour and a half away from the truck on the trail. And, you know, we're still filming the whole time and we're doing all these things. And then we're sitting there waiting for, so again, I'm on my 250 XC, Garrett's on my 300 XCW. And we're sitting there waiting for Chris to get in location to set up this shot that we had planned. And while I'm sitting there, my front tire goes flat. Like, I had an inner bladder failure on my tubeless on that bike. It's the first time I've ever had an inner bladder failure. An inner bladder failure on tubeless means the tire is flat. You can ride on flat. We'll get punctures in the tires all the time. And then you just, boom, takes you 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes top to put a plug in that thing and then get the air back in there. You have an inner bladder failure, and then that thing is going to be flat, all the way flat. And you've got to go back. And the frustrating part was I had not only multiple backup bladders back at the truck, because I'm just a Boy Scout, I had an entire wheel set, front and rear wheel set, that I could have just thrown on the truck. Like, if it had happened in the truck where it had gone flat that night, boom, I would have just like grabbed my backup front wheel and slapped it on the bike and go. And it would have taken me 4 minutes, 5 minutes, you know, but it happened an hour and a half away from the truck. And I'm like, oh, this sucks. And I'm like trying to figure out what to do. What's the best thing to do? And I'm like, I just got to ride this bike back and we're going to have to grab one of the other back. Or actually what I was going to do is ride the bike back, put my spare wheel set on, and then boom, come. And we're trying to figure out what the best thing is to do. We're looking at the GPS, like meeting points on the phone and everything. And then Garrett, he's like, hey, look, because you are paying Chris to be here and to film, and we don't want to waste that day, why don't I take your bike back to the truck and then I'll meet you guys. I'll take the bike back. I'll grab Tyler's bike or, you know, throw the other wheel on. And I'm like, yeah, you can get to back to the truck and just throw the other wheel on. And Tyler's like, hey, just to save even more time, just go back to the truck and get my 300 XCW and come. And then what we'll do is we'll continue on. We'll do some filming in this area, this area, this area, this area, and then come back and we'll meet at this one area, this one spot. So we're like, okay, this is good. We figured that out. Only problem is Garrett had never been to that area that we were going to meet him at. And he didn't have, he didn't have his phone with like the GPS maps. Well, I mean, he had his phone, but it didn't have GPS maps. He had his Garmin inReach, which is the GPS communicator, which I have as well, but its mapping capability is actually pretty dumb. I don't use it for the maps at all, but it works good for communicating. Anyway, long story short, we do the filming stuff and it was perfect idea and it was Garrett's idea. And I'm like, Garrett, that's actually a really, really good idea. And that'll help, you know, that way we don't waste the day or whatever. Well, we get to this area and we wait for him and we wait and wait and wait and we eat lunch. What we don't know is he's waiting for us in a different area and he thinks we just haven't gotten back to the meeting point yet. So we're waiting in areas that are like a half hour apart or something. So we decide, we're like, hey, we got to make a note so that if Garrett comes here, once he finally gets to this spot, we got to leave a note for him that, hey, we took off and we're going to continue with the rest of our loop, which is the longer loop. But don't follow us because we just wanted him to go back to the truck or figure. We wanted to basically make it so that if something happened to him, if he had a bike problem, if he had another problem, we were going to rule out at least one of the places that we could go looking for him. So we make a note. We make a charcoal note out of like stickers, and we just take a stick. I burn the end of the stick with my lighter, and then turn it into a charcoal pencil, and we write on some stickers that Chris had, and we tell him what's going on, and then we take off up this hill, and 40 minutes later, no, an hour later, through a series of crazy events, like we had a flat on Chris's back tire, which I plugged, which took us 7 minutes, and then Chris and I got separated from Tyler for about 7 or 8 minutes, because we went kind of a different way and then had to backtrack back. And then because of those two things that happened, then all of a sudden Garrett rolls up and we're like, dude, that's sweet that you're here, but like, why didn't you listen to our note? You know? And he's like, oh, I just figured I'd keep coming. And, you know, anyway, long story short, we get back together again. And then we continue with our ride and we do that. And it all just worked out really, really well. And it was cool that we had, you know, a bunch of extra things. We had a bunch of extra parts. I'll tell you what happened with Garrett's bike, why it wouldn't start. It was because one of the bolts that he put in was swapped. All the bolts are not the same length on those clutch covers. And if you put one that's a little bit too long down in one hole, it actually will go in there and drag. I don't know if it's dragging on the clutch basket or where it's dragging, but if you swap one of the bolts and put the wrong bolt in, it won't start. The bike won't start. There's just enough friction on it that it'll go click, click, click and won't start. Maybe it's engaging. Maybe it's coming in with the starter motor or engaging like some gear in there. I don't exactly know. I just know that all it took is once he got home, because he was going through a bunch of different things, but all it took was swapping the bolts, like swapping two bolts and then boom, the bike was fine. So that was just kind of a little bit of a frustrating day from a couple different perspectives, but we had a ton of really good riding. We all got back together. Garrett only missed one section of the trail that we had gone out and back and did some filming on, but he got to ride. He rode more than the rest of us. So we didn't feel too bad at the end of the day. So yeah, we get back together. It's a long day. That's day three. Then day four, we were going to actually ride a little bit closer back to home. We were going to ride in like the Ketchum area or the Haley area, Sun Valley. But Tyler and I decided to swap that around because we figured out that my drones would actually fly. For whatever reason, my drones were not throwing the no fly codes that Chris's drones were doing. And so we're like, hey, let's get some drone footage of going over to the Custer lookout. And so we swapped our plan to ride closer to home on the last day. And we're like, hey, we'll just do a short day on the Custer lookout because we can go up there and get some drone footage. And neither Garrett nor Chris had ever been to this area. And so we're like, hey, this is going to be an awesome thing. You guys are going to love this. And they did. It was just a really, really sweet day. That area over there in the Yankee Fork area is maybe my favorite stuff. You get up to this lookout. It's not for the faint of heart. There's a couple things that you have to do to get up there where a lot of guys are not going to want to do it. And the trail is getting kind of blown out up at the top because you've got to go, this rock outcropping forces you to go wide at one point, and it's just sloughing off and sloughing off. Chris had a miss up there. I sent him up. I'm like, hey, you go up there, you get set up for a shot, and then radio us and let us know when you're ready. And something happened up there in the worst possible spot, and he tipped the bike down. And luckily, he wasn't hurt, but it was just, you know, got his adrenaline going and whatever. But we ended up getting up there, getting some drone footage, and it was super, super cool. Carried that back down a canyon, some of the best stuff up there, and then back to the truck. So it was a shorter mileage day, but we stopped a bunch with filming and everything, and just had an awesome, awesome time. And then we start our, 7-hour trek back down to my house. And so it made for a long day because we had some road construction things, and I made a dumb thing. There was a road construction thing happening up there on the freeway, and it was late at night. And I was like, I got off the freeway when I should have stayed on it because it looked like I thought I was staying on the freeway, but they were taking me off of it. Normally to get off the freeway, you go to the right, at least in Utah and Idaho. I stayed to the left, and it was actually a freeway exit. Wasn't really well marked. And we were talking and late at night, and I'd been driving for a long time. Anyway, that added another 40 minutes to our trip. But got back at like 2 in the morning, maybe 2:30-ish in the morning. And that was the trip. And so Chris then worked for a couple weeks and got an edit down. It came down to, and I was hoping for something a little bit longer, but Chris was like, hey, let's just put this down. Let's condense it down. We've got about 22 minutes worth. If we want to do a longer version down the road where it's like, hey, we're going to spend a half hour on every day, we could put in some point of view footage, but there's no point of view footage in the thing. It's completely different than anything you've seen, from Dirt Bike Channel in the past. And I'm pretty proud of it. It's pretty cool. I think for our first time doing it, it's not Chris's first time doing a video like this, but for my first time kind of trying to produce something like this and put it out there, I'm pretty proud of what we did. Chris did an awesome job with the video edit. We had a ton of fun doing it. And yeah, I mean, that was some of these trips that you go on your dirt bikes are just like memories that you make. It just are so amazing and so awesome. And I can't wait to be doing more of that with my sons. Every time I go to these places like this and do adventures like this, I'm just kind of in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm going to bring my boys back here. You know, I've got two sons that are into dirt bikes. One of them is 12 and one of them is 10. And I don't get them out nearly as much as I'd like to. Just so many things going on, and it just running this business, it just never ends. You know, this week I know I've worked at least 80 hours. I've been working 16-hour days in the last week. Here it is Sunday, and I've already put 5 hours in on Sunday. I don't like to work on Sunday, but I've just got so much going on, and I hadn't put out a podcast for over a month, and I had to get another YouTube video up. Anyway, I need to get out more with my boys and make that more of a priority and get them out. But that's what I'm thinking about is, hey, all the adventures we're going to have in the future. So if you haven't checked out that little film, go ahead and do that. It's over at dirtbikechannel.com. You go to dirtbikechannel.com and you look under the shop. That's where it is located right now. Under the shop menu, it says videos, and it's Leave a Single Track Volume 1. Please, please, please do not share those videos online. Basically, you can click on it. You buy it for $10. It sends you an email where you download the video onto your phone or your computer or whatever, or you can stream it. The video service that I'm using is called Gumroad. gumroad.com. It's all over there. But please don't share that online once you've downloaded the video, because you'd be stealing from me. And it was stinking expensive to make it. It was a lot of work to make it. And please don't do that. You'd also be violation in copyright law if you did that. I don't know. Maybe down the road, if it turns out that, you know, it was a dumb idea, it never even comes close to breaking even, maybe down the road at some point I'll release it on YouTube. I don't know. But as of right now, I think if we just keep kind of pushing it or whatever, maybe it'll break even. And it might take 6 months. It might take a year until we break even. I'm not out of, you know, my own privacy. I'm not going to tell you how much it cost to make that, but it was a lot of money. So we gotta have a lot of downloads, a lot of purchases on that before we would break even. And if it's successful, I hope to do things like this in the future, you know, and do it bigger and better and have a fun time with it. Either way, it was fun to make, and it's a nice keepsake for me and writing buddies for Chris. Chris is really proud of it. And it's a memory for him. It's an awesome memory for Tyler and Garrett that also came up on the ride. Wanted to thank those guys for being so cool and being patient enough to do that and just allowing the ride to get slowed down and stuff because we're filming. But I think those guys are pretty happy with how it turned out. If you want to support Dirt Bike Channel, one of the best ways to do it is to go download that video on my website. You can also use my parts links to Rocky Mountain ATV and Motorsport and Amazon. You can find those over there on my website or in the description of any of the YouTube videos that you find. And I think that's pretty much it. So go check out that video, and I hope you have a really, really great week here. Leave a single track. Thanks, guys.